All right, this is Olga Koch, and you're listening to Upfront, the podcast for financial services businesses who want to spice things up, build better relationships, and feel the love. We're all about embracing the issues and working on the solutions here. So strap yourselves in and get ready for some straight talking and tough love. If you're working on something in financial services that you're proud of, drop me a line at upfront@iras.com. And if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe and follow Upfront on your favorite podcast app so you don't ever miss any of this good stuff. Financial services sure do make the world go round, but are they accessible to everyone? Or are there people who get in line to get into the club but get told that their name's not on the list, so they're not coming in? You know I like to start the podcast with an upfront question that takes no prisoners. Today, I'm asking, how can we make financial services more inclusive? Most people's financial services journey starts with their bank. It's their first foray into buying more financial products like mortgages, insurance, loans and investments, and possibly seeking advice. But what about the 1.7 billion adults who remain unbanked? That's a lot of people who are missing out on all the good the industry can bring. And let's not forget the surprising amount of people who want or need access to financial services, but struggle to, perhaps because they aren't financially literate or lack the basic digital skills to do so. Governments want a solution to the financial inclusion problem, and there are smart people working on it, but what exactly is the solution? FinTech is helping make financial services more affordable and easier to access. But is it also creating new barriers where old ones have been torn down? I'm joined by someone who is working on the front line of equality in financial services, researcher and policy advisor Dr. Karen Elliott, who's here to talk about building accessible, inclusive, and ethical financial services that more people can love. So let's go. Dr. Karen, let's get right to it. How can we make financial services more inclusive?
If we really want to make financial services more inclusive, we need to recognize that when we do investment rounds that we all see, the big evaluations and the funding rounds, etc., that it's not all about profit, that people are supported to do good, to make it more financially inclusive, to really pay proper attention on authenticity to inclusion.
Do you think financial services businesses see themselves as inclusive?
If I went and surveyed the UK FinTech Network and said, do you think you are financially inclusive? Do you think that you think about financial inclusion every time you develop a new product or service? People would want to say yes, because they want, it's good PR, it looks good for your reports, etc. And that comes with a pinch of salt, right? Is it authentic? Question mark, put a pin in it. But if we really want to do something, there are ways of doing it. I've been looking, the knowing the what we need to do is we need to actually include people. But finding the how do we do that has been very difficult. I say it's taken me over a year to find a company who is doing the how, properly doing the how. There's lots of ethical principles out there. This is what we should do. This is what we should do around our should do, the what. But moving it to the how has been more difficult. We're now getting ethics as a service coming through and sharing of that resource because it's finite. Not many people are aware of how the ethical questions feed into the digital world. Because you don't want to cramp innovation by saying you can't do this and you can't do that, because we need innovators.
I couldn't agree more. There's some amazing innovation in financial services, but is tech helping or is it creating more barriers?
Technology is great, has a lot of innovation and potential, but if it's just codifying what we've always done, why, you know, it's like Einstein, why would you expect a different outcome? And this is what I'm passionate about looking at the social aspects that feed into this exclusion. And then what do we need to break the barriers? The tech is there. We can do it. People are proving that they can do it. And this is this back towards a purpose. If we really want financial inclusion, then we've got to tackle our own bias, because humans are hereditarily biased. We make judgments all the time. And that's just codified into our data sets, which are then used for training machine learning, which then gets aggregated up to the AI and automated. And then without human oversight, guess what? You're still going to get exclusion. So this is what we need to do. We need to look at the data and then look at the systems and processes. So the digitize, the digitalization, and then how do we transform it to make sure that we've got a bit more of an equitable digital society for everyone?
I mean, it sounds amazing. Can you tell us more about your vision?
Equitable is basically equality. You know, you have equity, so you have a quality of life that you can spread across. So that when we go look across society, and it might be a bit of a utopian view by some people, but that we would be roughly equal. I guess I set out as a bit of a cynic from a social science background that there are too many problems to unpack to make this work. But I think if we do work together, and there are so many companies, I was on sabbatical last year, and I just found that this fragmented ecosystem of really passionate people embedded in their communities doing great work. But guess what? What are they fighting for? Funding. The same pots of funding. If we can throw away, you know, billions of pounds on PPE that doesn't work in lockdown, why can't we reappropriate and go, if the government really want to start tackling this? Now, by a wicked problem, I mean that they're never fully resolved. They're always going to be there, but we can manage them in chunks. Well, it's like you can eat an elephant, right? How do you eat an elephant? One chunk at a time. So if you chunk away at this, but collectively attach these networks of people who are doing things and not make them fight over the same funding every year, going through, as we know, when we apply for something, lots of forms, whether it's online or physical, to get this money to do good stuff.
Why is financial inclusion such a challenge for the industry?
That's what I would call a wicked problem, that you're trying to think, right, if I want to set up a company, if I want to drive financial inclusion, we've got lots of problems to deal with here. Does everybody have access to digital technology? No. So that's why I work with the Digital Poverty Alliance, looking at, like, how do you do stage one? Someone isn't connected, doesn't have the skills, doesn't have the education. How do we work with education and fintech companies and people who like me, have this idea in mind that we can do it? Collectively, we can do it. That's stage one, looking at how we get connectivity. And then people like the Good Things Foundation, once we got Connevity, still around 9 million once we were connected, still don't know how to use it. So let's give you some free skills in the community and do a trusted learning environment so you can actually understand how to use the tech. Then next, when you're on the tech, I've got to pay for the data. I've got to pay a user. So I was speaking to people this morning about trials that are in South Africa where you get free access to data by changing the business model. So the data provider can provide some free data to people who really can't afford it. So that's all in the pipeline. Some of this is really emergent and cutting edge, admittedly. So no one's a real expert in this. I would say people have got expertise, and then we link together to make it an expert experience. That's what I would say. We can get good practice, adapt it for maybe a cultural difference in that area, and get it to work to drive inclusion. That's how I would like to see it working. We're not quite there yet, but there's lots of people like me as well who are also passionate about there is an issue, but if we work collectively, this is how you achieve it. No one person can do it.
And where do you see businesses struggling with their efforts to be more inclusive?
The problem is when you come to investment in it, that investment is driven on the understanding of profit. Once you get successful in this area, your investors take you to scale up, want you to be more profitable. And how are you more profitable? You need a bigger market, which then leaves this problem still there of how do we address financial inclusion? Because nobody will accept the slower rate of profit to really dig into these big financial problems. And again, even though there is a solution here to do digital financial inclusion, you've still got to get people connected first. So we've still got the problem over here of first stage. How do we get people access to the digital even? We saw that in lockdown. Children crowded around one small phone to do their education. That's not how it should be in the 21st century. But these are complex and wicked problems. And the only way we solve it is by real stakeholder engagement to understand the lived experience, where the barriers are.
How can businesses ensure that they are being authentic when it comes to financial inclusion?
I think they need to ask some more questions of their data. I mean, it's I call it a ticky box mentality. You know, if we're given a job, and we're all guilty of it, we're going to job. What is my job role? Right, I've got to do this. Tick. I've got to make sure it's know your customer. Tick. I actually think beyond the tick box control compliance. Governance is not just a tick box exercise. It is more about responsibility. Surely we've got a responsibility. If we've got great tech, let's make it for everyone. I think I was speaking to someone yesterday, they were saying, yeah, you think about it. Do you go in your office every day in finance and ask yourself, am I serving the broader sector that I can in the most responsible way that I can? Most people aren't doing that because they're bothered. Are they a risk is what comes to mind. Are they a risk to this business? And yes, we've got to be cognizant of risks. But also, if we want to have authentic financial inclusion, we've got to ask the awful ethical questions of, it's my job to come in and go, am I being as inclusive as I possibly can? If not, why not? And how can I collaborate with somebody else who's done that?
Who do you think is going to take a lead on this?
I think if someone can do it and take it and make a business out of it, then we can do that. We can share it. Does it have to be your full business model? No. But the smart entrepreneurs, et cetera, know when to pivot and I know where true engagement is. But we always come back to this profit, purpose, motive, and the tension, the trade-offs between it. Now, if you want to be a successful company and you want investment, do you have to trade off? You probably do. But then maybe we should ask us the awkward question, well, so when is purpose going to get a bit higher on that balance or continuum? Is it all right just dipping your proverbial toe in the purpose bit saying, oh, well, we're a green investor, so tick, there goes that box. We're doing our bit for the environment. Okay, but whose environment? The affluent few or the excluded many? And they're not nice questions for leaders to ask, particularly because as well, where do they get the skills from? Where do they get people? How do they talk to people like me or other people are doing it? But we are out there in the ecosystem and therefore we're interconnected. We're all battling against different types of systems and compliance and regulation. So if we see there's a pain point, why not collaborate and go, what did you do? Why is it so hard to go, what did you do around that? Can I learn from you? I've got this collected knowledge from asking these questions. You know, what is it like to be on the marginalized society? How can I do digital identity for you if you don't have a driving license, a passport, and a fixed abode, so you've got no utility? What can I use instead? What does everybody have? They usually have an NHS number because at some point they'll have come in contact with the NHS, whether you're a refugee, whether you're on the margins, whether you're rehabilitating back into society or whatever. And therefore, we built a prototype around that. But then I went and tested it with people in finance and said, if we came up with this verified credential that was based on NHS number, how would that work? Straight away, it would have to work with KYC and the FCA would have to rubber stamp it, otherwise we're not touching it, was the basic message. So therefore, then you fall foul of, we can go so far with innovation, but then the responsibility gets kind of skewed in overbearing regulation.
Are you optimistic about financial inclusion improving?
So I think I am optimistic because I'm starting to see different organizations come up with good intent, you know, Digital Poverty Alliance, Good Things Foundation, MasterCard are funding them. So we've got bigger financial companies changing and opening their portfolios and thinking about where we need to go. You've got Financial Inclusion Association who are trying to sort of pressurize and lobby for government to say, if you really want to level up, these are the things we need to address. You've got people who've just gone ahead and done it, like Nkuta going, there is a way to do this. Technology can drive it. We just need to think a little bit out of the box. Would our profit margins be as big? No. Can we handle that? Yes. Can we still deliver? Yes. Let's go. It sounds easy, but there's all sorts of factors under that people just need a grip of and go, okay, cool. If I want to change the world, this is what I need to do. I can hear music. Is that it?
Oh, yeah. That's definitely the sound of love. Dr. Karen, are you ready to meet Dr. Love? It's time for your checkup. Let me hear that heartbeat. You've got a lot on your mind and on your heart. I can tell there's a lot of love in there, so let's switch things up.
Okay.
Talk to me about what you love about financial services.
What I love about financial services is that it has so many possibilities to do so many good things. I'm really excited about what the next steps are for open banking, open finance. And also when you see the joy of people being able to be in control of finances, whether it's through the technology or even just helping, like I do, help people who've got dementia, etc., actually still connect with that until their cognitive abilities can't work anymore. But what I really love about finance is it's the heartbeat of how we work. You know, and it overlaps with society, it overlaps with technology, but finance has got a major role in changing up the systems that we use, and it'll cascade through all the systems. So what I love about financial technologies is it's got infinite possibilities used in a responsible way. And so, boom, as Klopwood said, be responsible, be ethical, and boom, financial services will do it.
That's great. On the other hand, we all have some kind of relationship with financial services, regardless of whether we work in them or don't. I want to hear more about your relationship with it. What's the one thing you want financial services to break up with for good? What do you think needs to get dumped?
Tick boxes. Tick box mentality that, you know, when our computer says no, yes or no, can I have a loan? No, can't have it. To actually broaden it out to understand. So ditch the tick boxes, make the regulator's life easy by having real life, real time engagement with the data. It's there, use it. Ditch the tick boxes.
Yeah. So do you foresee a more bespoke approach to all groups? So you've mentioned, for example, people with dementia or people who are not digitally literate. So do you think there's just going to be like more granular approaches to different groups?
I think so, because society's like that. And if you're serving society, which finance does and can better, I think, you've got to have that granular of data. I mean, the computer scientists that I work with here, that's what they do. They look at the granularity of the data and how can they use that in the best combination to make it work. Okay. So I think with finances as well, we've got to go beyond that yes, no dichotomy. Is it a yes, no closed answer? No, it needs to be an open question, like open banking, open finance that everybody talks about. We're already using it. We don't perhaps call it open banking, but we're already using it and we're already benefiting from all the apps that we use. So yeah, open up, open society. Therefore, we need open finance and ways of thinking about it. An open mind to open innovation.
Is the challenge of inclusion accessibility completely solved by tech that caters to all? Where do you think that line between tech and human oversight sits?
Well, I always start with the human first and then the tech. You know, how do we do financial inclusion for somebody who's got dementia? How do we do financial inclusion for a veteran from war who's struggling with his finances on his pension? If we start to look at the problems with them, with what we deliver as a service, and ask ourselves hard questions. You know, I've had this discussion many times. If you start with a tech solution, you're looking for a problem to solve. Whereas if you start with the human, like say human first, and it's still problem, we know we're complex adaptive systems in ourselves. We do all sorts of unpredictable things. So therefore, if you start with the humans, like say someone like I've lived with my mother's dementia now for 2.5 years and seeing the difficulties and how hard that is to manage. If you get it right for somebody with dementia, the human problem, where is the problem? Does it need to be that the carers are given access? How do they get access? Oh, you have to go through this lengthy process of proving who you are and access and have power of attorney over that. If we solve these problems, then through careful thinking, not always frictionless. You know, we key with that word, the potential of fintech to do this, the frictionless society. Maybe we do need some friction in there. You solve it with someone with dementia, you solve it for a lot of other people as well, because the necessary safeguards and checks will be in there, but also benefiting from the technology. Now, not everybody will want the technology, so I think we also need to cater for there's a choice. There's still going to be a hybrid system around for a long time.
Can you give us an example of how a service can be redesigned to be more inclusive for someone with dementia?
Yeah, I can point you to a company called Sibster, who have done all of that. Literally, they had tech glasses on to see how a person with dementia perceives and interprets the world. And so based on that firsthand information of literally seeing through the mind's eye of someone with dementia, they've built this product that places dual care. So the person with dementia can still have a debit card, can still go out and spend their money, but a bit like a gambling app, on the app, the carer can see where they're spending and also put limits or blocks on certain places. So yes, that's how you do the development with seeing the real lived experience, and how do we come up with a technological solution that works for the person to not rob them of their of wanting to go and buy a coffee and a cake and socialize. So I think it's a really great innovation around that. And we're going to be working with them, looking at the legal powers of attorney and how we digitize that process to make it easier for providers to safely serve somebody with dementia. So it's not the tech looking for a problem to solve. It's the tech understanding that problem and saying, what can it realistically do? Because there are limitations to what tech can do. If we get more innovation, then I think we are pushing towards true financial inclusion. And the emphasis is on true, true financial inclusion, not just lip service.
This is really, really interesting. And I not only enjoy the optimism, but also just how granular it is. Like it doesn't feel
it is.
It doesn't feel like everything's a catch-all term. It feels very personal to people and their experiences.
You know, all those sort of things I would never have known if I hadn't gone to the human person and said, what is your life cycle with finance across your life? And it differs from mine. I mean, I was a single parent for 12 years and that changed my financial profile. The amount of times I got asked, can you still use reference to your ex-husband? No. Okay, right. Well, your credit score, you know, no, you can't have that. And that's just a small example that gave me some insights. And well, if that happens to me, what if? Tech is brilliant, but we need to understand the human first, because in the end, humans build the tech anyway. So we've got to have that appreciation of the human. The tech is an enabler to start to address some of the hard problems we have got to face to get to financial inclusion. But I am optimistic that we are starting to make inroads into that, and people are coming up with wonderful, ingenious innovation. But it's always with a caveat for me. Yeah, but we need some of the ethical and responsibility thinking up front to make sure that your good intentions don't result in unintended consequences and cause a harm further down, which is part of the research I'm involved in now.
Absolutely. So it's a tool and not a solution. So what one piece of advice would you give to anyone wanting to build a more lovable financial services business, and why do you think it's so important?
I would start with a problem that you see with the system from a human perspective, and I'll not just build the tech in the vision of Karen or the vision of Olga, what we know. Look broader and say, okay, if I wasn't me, where are the problems? You know, people like me are catered for, sorted. But where do I start there? And then start to look, who's operating in this area, a bit like I did, who's operating in this area, to fully understand. And then I can collaborate. If I haven't got the technical knowledge, I'll find someone who has. And then we can actually say, stand with hand on heart, we are pushing for financial inclusion. We're using finance for good, and we're going to push it forward. That's what I would do personally. And I would balance my purpose and my profit. And that's the trickiest part, I think, with people. When you're building something, you need, it's a chicken and egg. You need some money and some capital to develop and scale up. But do you sell your soul for profit, or do you actually stick to the purpose of wanting to do great things with tech? And I know there's lots of people out there do.
Yes, absolutely. What are your main tips to make financial services more inclusive?
Understand the lived experience. Work on the pain points that stops it. Get rid of your tick box mentality if you really want to do financial inclusion. You've got to think wider and ask yourself awkward, responsible, and ethical questions.
Yes. Oh my God, yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. I feel like everything you said, I want to put on a bumper sticker and a t-shirt immediately.
Dr. K says.
Yes.
I would like to thank Dr. Karen Elliott for sharing her great work with us, and I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to hear all of this good stuff. If you want to know more about Dr. Karen and how you can improve financial inclusion and accessibility where you work, find a link to the Upfront blog in our podcast notes. And don't forget, I want to hear from you too. Tell me what's on your mind at upfront@irs.com. If you love this episode so much that you wanted to send it to a friend, boss, or colleague, you need to subscribe and follow Upfront so you don't miss the next episode. Next time, it's all about everyone's favorite topic, data. But don't worry, we'll make it sexy.